Welcome to episode 18 of Old Stories, New Information. I'm your host, Brent Colley. And on today's episode, I am joined by the author of Connecticut Industries Unite in World War II Victory. My guest is Sharon Cohen of Newtown, Connecticut. And Sharon, I'm so happy that you could join us this morning. Your book is really perfect for the show.
Well, it's great to be here. Thanks for the opportunity. I know it's great because it's talking about things that happened in the past that we only learned about now.
That's a thing. But so how did this story become a book? How did you get into this?
It's a really crazy story, really a fluke. So I can't say that I went on this deep historian venture and found, you know, the lost city of Newtown or something. So I was cleaning out my office during COVID, and I came across this old folder. And, you know, my office hadn't been cleaned. I had a business for 40 years. So a client once gave me this folder for a book project on industry in Connecticut. But 2 days later, it was canceled because they figured they couldn't get the money together. They wanted to do a big celebration for the veterans. So I never really looked at it until COVID. And when I opened it up, it was incredible. I was amazed what I found. There was a letter written in 1946 by the Connecticut Department of War Records, and they're asking state companies to write reports on their recent World War II production experiences. And underneath that, in pencil, there was a scribbled catalog number at the state library archives. And that really was about it in there. So a few days later, masked and gloved, because remember, this is right in the middle of COVID, I headed up to Hartford to the library. And there were four boxes waiting for me, and there were several archivists, and they were kind of standing around the boxes as I was opening them, because in many times with archives, people know what's on the catalog, but they don't know what's in it, because sometimes it hasn't been opened in years. And I don't know when these boxes had been opened the last time, but they were 80 years old. Near 80, because the war was at that point. And it was really a researcher's dream. I mean, I was really excited because inside there were all these original reports written right after the war from companies. And they were alphabetical by the companies themselves. And it was like right from the horse's mouth. I don't know if we use that saying anymore, but it was.
No, you're right. No, primary sources. So golden.
Yeah. So each company, in its own words, explained what it was like right during the war time. And they talked about the problems of conversion from peacetime to wartime. They talked about what it was like not having enough labor and the shortages in materials. And then, which was really fun, is they talked about their innovations about what they had made that was new during the war. And the interesting thing, really, is that each one, because they were written by different people, some locations it was the president, some locations it was the marketing or PR, and other times it was the employees. So each of them had a different tone and quality. So they talked about a lot of different things, but the tone was interesting because it told about the culture of the company. And because sometimes the person who wrote it said wonderful things about the employees and about things that were going on in the company. And then there were some ones that were very brusque, and this is what we did, and this is what we accomplished, and that was it. So it was really interesting to kind of get a look into the person who was actually writing the report and the company itself.
So which companies or individuals from companies stood out to you most?
Well, there was one from specifically from the Norwalk Company in And I have the whole quote in my book. I'm not going to read it now, but Norwalk Company, which is still around, they helped make torpedoes during the war for the submarines. Yeah. And it's a tearjerker. They talk about, someday we will know why this happened and what was the importance of our employees and why we needed to gather together to help each other. And so it was very warm and fuzzy, and it was really very emotional. And then there was one from a gentleman up in who ran in Essex, who ran Pratt Reed, and he was a real, and I heard since then that he's a true businessman. I mean, for him, he had to keep the business running, and Pratt Reed was really interesting because they went from making pianos with ivory keys, right? And remember, they were still getting ivory at that point. It was dwindling, but they were still getting ivory. So they went immediately from making these pianos with ivory keys to making the first military gliders in the United States. And it's incredible that they changed businesses. They no longer called themselves the piano maker. They called themselves an aerospace industry. And that's how they got through the war. And they kept on changing. In the future, they kept on changing their personality as well. And in his report, he talked about the problems with the unions and the problems with that after the war, these employees were asking for too much and they were doing too little. So it was a very different take than the Norwalk Company.
Yeah, no doubt. No, and I totally understand. Where I grew up was Georgetown, which is a part of Reading, and they had the Gilman Bennett Wire Manufacturing Company there. So their woven wire became camouflage as well as landing mats and a bunch of other
yep.
stuff. So, we did transition. The other thing, too, which I think you point out in your book, is that women became a big part of the workforce at that moment.
And yeah, as I said before, one of the big problems was labor. And in from two points, first of all, the government dictated in many cases how many employees you could have based on what you were making and the importance of the items that you were making. And secondly, there was a huge competition. You have to remember that Connecticut is a very small state, and when you have major hubs like Bridgeport and Hartford and New Haven, which are making most of the materials, even though there are thousands of companies all over the state, they were really trying to get the people in. And so, of course, women were the answer for this in many respects. And there were women, it's interesting, in one of the reports, they talk about these older women coming in. Now, these older women were in their 40s, right? They had already been married. They were married and they had children, and they're going into the workforce for the first time. And they were most of the companies are extremely positive about these women, and they ran machine tools. They did welding over with the submarines. They electric boat sent them to school. And they were not only talking about white, we're talking about African American women, we're talking about Puerto Rican, and and a lot of immigrants. So it was an ideal situation for women. As we know, after the war, a lot of these women went back home again. But in certain businesses like Associated Spring with Barnes Group in Bristol, they actually, some of the managers, the women in management remained. So that, again, was different depending on the company.
Huh. No, that's fantastic. And so, like, within your book, you said that that this time of history, World War II, makes some very strong points. That's one of them. What are the others?
Well, the innovation was incredible. that if you looked at, let's just take D-Day, for example, and you just mentioned that. You mentioned about the wire, the wire matting that was on the beaches that was made in Georgetown. Up in the sky, you know, those huge barrage balloons, those are made for the first time in Naugatuck at the U.S. Rubber Company. The U.S. Rubber Company also made the Ghost Army, which fooled the Germans about how many troops there were in troop location. There were the military gliders that we just mentioned before. They were there, and of course on the beach, we can't even. There's no way of knowing there the blankets, the guns, the shoes. Everything, the tanks, everything there, many things there were either made here or the guts, those really important small pieces like the ball bearings and the springs that made those machines work.
Oh, I know. That's the thing. Like, no one really considers it, but Connecticut is filled with companies that provide for, even to, in the present day, the Department of Defense. And that's what I think that your book really brings to light is pretty much how it, I think, all began. Is that true?
Yes. Well, inventions have been part of Connecticut's from the very beginning. They were a leader across the country, well, I guess New England at the very beginning. I do want to say, though, that we always talk about the fact that Connecticut doesn't have much industry left, but I was interested in seeing that some of these companies are still here today, and of course, the larger ones are still here today, Pratt Whitney and Electric Boat and Sikorsky. They're still here, even though we say a lot of them left the state, which they did, there is still being a lot produced today.
Well, I think a lot of them got rolled into UTC, and that, you know, that kind of like consolidated the names that you would have seen. But, yeah, they totally exist. My dad was in Electric Security, so we were a big part of their, you know, securing their facilities. There was Allied Signal. Maybe it's still there in Stratford as well. And we did all those that you mentioned. And it is a big part of the industry of Connecticut. And that's, I think, something that people really don't know about. And that's why I'm glad that your book came out to kind of like, maybe it wasn't the roots, but it was the expansion of those industries as we entered into the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Right, so right. And you asked me what my other thoughts. This is a very naive statement, and I'm not sure it's true or not, but I don't know if Connecticut hadn't made its products, whether or not we had been victorious in the war or maybe would have been delayed. Even before the war started, Pratt & Whitney was making engines, maybe over 300,000 engines and the propellers, the Corsair. There were so many major, and submarines, of course, there were so many major different things made here that you wonder whether or not, what would have happened if they hadn't been made in this state.
Well, it's true, and I think that you're right in terms of pointing out that they were willing to convert what they did normally to help the war effort. I mean, you know, people that were making coats or buttons or engines, you know, they converted to different things and they innovated. Like you said, we went from pianos to gliders. That's a pretty big jump. So that's what I like about
yeah.
your book is that it's like, wow, you know, they were really willing to help and they wanted to help. And so it really brings a real positive view to, you know, where we live.
But it also brings a very positive view to humanity, I believe. I mean, it shows that humans have the capacity to do much more than we're doing, and we can do that when we need to. I mean, some of these innovations came about within weeks and months. We're not talking about the fact that they started research now, and maybe 10 years from now the product came out. We're talking about very quick turnaround. And secondly, we were in the midst of a horrible time in this country. We were going through the Depression. There was a huge isolationism in the country, of course, because we were still thinking about World War I. There were a lot of people who were psychologically and physically damaged here in the country. And yet, when we had to, we came together. And that, to me, from my background in psychology and sociology, that's really an important factor to keep in mind.
I love that, because that's like your book, like, did that for the pandemic. That brought it back to your focus, and then you refocus, and then you provide this coming out of the pandemic. So same kind of things were going on, isolation, depression, a lot of other things, but this positive, you know, product comes out of that.
So, right.
Excellent. And then you have upcoming talks.
Yes, I do. I'm going to be at...
You're in Easton, right?
I'll be in Easton, and then over the rest of the year, actually, I have a lot going around different parts of the state. I'm in libraries. I've been doing I'm hoping for D-Day to do some maybe in the military locations. And then the seniors communities really loved one. I did one recently for Essex on the military gliders. So I look for my name. I'm running around the state.
No, we're going to have you up here in the northwest corner. We're just going to pick the right venue to capture the biggest audience for you. And because I think it's a really fantastic topic. So thank you so much.
Thank you. This is fun.
It is. That's what we're all about. So for the listeners, as we've noted in all episodes, we have an email account, and you can write to it, stories@robinhoodradio.com. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you think. If you want to know more about Sharon and what she's doing, you can do that. But until next time, be well and always do right. This will gratify some people and astonish the rest. Enjoy your week.
Old Stories, New Information with Brent Colley is produced at the studios of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.